It's all right, and we're coming.
Oh my
we're
God.
Gonna get right back to where we started from. Love is you. Love can.
You know why I'm singing?
Love is good. Love can be strong. Gotta get right back to where we started from. That, no matter how many people mangle that song, it always puts a smile on my face. Like, that was a terrible rendition of it. That was vomit invoking wish, but it's just such a beautiful song that I can't help but smiling right now.
The only reason I'm singing it is I'm doing the show from my parents' house today in lovely Mattawa, New Jersey.
Oh, you're doing, is it Blogger Stereotype Day? Is it basement day for you?
Blogger Stereotype today. Not only a basement, my friend, but a wood paneled basement with devil's pendants on the wall. It was the last song that I heard on the radio as I descended into the basement because this may be your parents too. I don't know. This is one of those moments where I'm putting it out there to see if my parents are the weird ones or maybe they're just as weird as your parents. The radio, the radio in the breakfast nook, which is the eating area outside the kitchen. The radio is never off. It's on the oldie station from the moment that the old man wakes up. And I don't know if it just runs out of batteries at some point, the radio, or if he actually shuts it off, but it just stays on all day. And at some point it does get that sort of like, you know how like when you're on vacation and you have to go to a department store and it's kind of an off-brand department store and it feels creepy and the radio that they have pumping through it isn't satellite or isn't digital. It's just a local station, but it's a local station that they can't seem to tune in correctly. So it just has that undercurrent of static the entire time that you listen to it. That's also my parents' radio in the breakfast nook.
That's part of the charm, though. Isn't that part of the charm of listening to that? But hang on. But isn't that the part, because it's an oldie station, right? Like, do you want it to be, like, work with me on this one. Do you want it to be crystal clear? Like, do you want it to sound like you're in the studio as they record it? Or do you want it to sound like it sounded like on the radio when it was released?
So apparently what you're saying is that you think that the static is sort of harkening back to the old AM days.
Yes.
Before the crystal clear sound of FM, the crackle of AM.
Yes, 100%. Doesn't it lend sort of a more, because this is all, you know, drenched in, you know, nostalgic syrup. Doesn't it lend more of an authenticity to the experience when you're hearing it as you heard it 30 years ago as a kid?
Oh, totally. And I think that's also why my father has so many LPs. And why my father has so many VHS tapes.
Any 8-tracks? Any 8-tracks kicking around?
He has 8-tracks, but he hasn't listened to them. Most of his recording is still done via the cassette tape.
Oh,
my dad,
yes.
My dad's been on the show before.
Yeah.
A few times. And he frequents a bar in New York called Hogs and Heifers, which is sort of the off-brand offshoot of Coyote Ugly. And but without the overt sexuality of Coyote Ugly, I'd say.
Bras hanging all over the bar.
He's such a they definitely do. He's such a and one of them is actually that of lovely actress Julia Roberts.
Very nice.
He was such a regular there, that his license plate is on the wall. And also what he used to do, and I think he still does this, even though I don't quite know how this is still currency. He would create mixtapes on cassettes. Country music mixtapes, and then pass them to the bartendress for free drinks.
No way. Yes. That's like, hey, you want to hear an interesting story? This will get a laugh. Because hockey, we've always talked about the difference between dumb and hockey dumb. And hockey just presents some bizarre things in your life. Was talking to someone, an ex-NHL, I don't see who it is, as an ex-NHLer who finished up his career playing in Austria. Okay. And there is apparently, I can't remember which team it was that he finished up playing with, but there is a very well-known massage parlor. Hang on.
Ooh.
So like do it like Mo from Slapshot. Mm-hmm. Call a massage parlor. That the gentleman would frequent. And there was one guy who played in the Western Hockey League. Again, his name shall remain anonymous, who frequented this establishment so many times in his, I want to say, 5-year career in Austria that he has his jersey retired in the massage parlor. 100% true story. If you catch one of the MBSW tweet ups or draft parties, I'll tell you who it is. But it's he has his jersey retired in the massage parlor. You walk in, it's hanging up
there. It does. I was going to say, it does beg the question. Is it just hanging on the wall with tacks, or is it hanging from the rafters of the parlor? Like, if I look up, am I going to see some dude's nameplate when I'm on my back?
Hey, I watched him play in the Western Hockey League. Wow, this is somehow not erotic at all anymore. Now.
That guy.
Him? I think we're done here, ma'am.
Speaking of hockey dumb, we might as well get into the news since the last podcast, which included one of your single favorite players in the entire world driving his classic truck into a Tim Hortons at 4 in the morning. Not the drive-thru, ladies and gentlemen.
No.
Ryan O'Reilly did the drive-in.
Yeah. I can't joke about it, can't laugh about it, but damn it, what a stereotypical Canadian drunk thing to do.
Listen, let's preface this whole thing, because God knows we'll get flack for it. There's nothing inherently funny about drunk driving. It's a very dangerous thing. You should never do it. That said, he hit a Tim Hortons at 4 in the morning with his truck that he had purchased a few weeks ago. A gorgeous, like, 57 Chevrolet. It looked like the kind of car Pa Kent would have driven to pick up Superman from the crater. Okay. And he Instagrammed it. He was so damn proud of it. He bought it even before he signed his contract extension. And then he crashes it into a Tim Hortons at 4 in the morning and does the thing you shouldn't do, even if you
Goes
are
away.
A famous athlete.
He ran away.
Yeah, ran away. Exactly.
Well, yeah, not of the, you know, soberest mind at that point. I'm not going to, you know, jump up and down and get angry and wag my finger, because that should be obvious and your preface is the right one. It's a stupid thing to do. It's a dumb thing to do. It's a very serious thing to do, and people shouldn't do it at all. But not that it happens so often that you almost become numb to it. But what I don't get with all these guys that make so much money, and I get, you know, it's your ride and, you know, you want your car and all that kind of shiz. Wouldn't you be taking cabs everywhere?
Oh, yeah. Wish? Ubers, everything. Have your buddy drive you.
Yeah. It's not as if, like, oh, man, I got to shell out $40 for a cab the next day to go get my car back if I'm going to leave it here. That's the thing that I just don't get.
That said, don't you think that there, I mean, there's an inherent thing with, and again, I'm not trying to do the LeBron can't play with a hangnail, but Gregory Campbell played with a gunshot. No, I'm not trying to say that. But I think that there's a thing with hockey players where, as rich as they are and as blingy as they could be and as much millions of dollars as they make, they want to kind of just be the boys from the neighborhood still, you know? And, like, driving your classic Chevy with your buddy at 4 in the morning, tooling around town, going to grab some Timbits, right? Like, come on. I mean, that's every summer, right? That's every summer. So you don't want to be the guy who takes the Uber everywhere. I mean, some guys do. Some guys, I'm sure, are in love with the idea that they can be the Vinny Chase to the rest of their entourage. But for a guy like O'Reilly, I mean, I'm sure it's like, you know what? I'm making this money, whatever, but, like, I just want to be that guy. I just want to be who I was, you know, 5 years ago when all we would do is drive around town and drink whatever the hell you drink in Canada.
Drive around drunk in rural Ontario. Be that guy.
Right. It's a rite of passage, isn't it, rural Ontario?
My gosh. Jeez. There's nothing. Nothing good comes of this one. Nothing.
It comes at a. I mean, and listen, I don't think it's going to really impact him from a professional standpoint, although I do find it amusing that many people are saying, why don't you trot out the morality clause and redo the contract? Hang on.
They would have a point.
Yeah, I mean,
they would have a point. And, you know, Buffalo won't, but you could make that point really strongly.
This bizarre Mike Richards situation that's still hanging out there without any resolution, that's what makes it so interesting from a PA perspective. And why they jumped to his defense was this idea of, oh my God, if you're going to start using that on things like this, I mean, at least on the surface of what it sounded like, then you could literally trot it out for anything. And the PA does not want that precedent set.
Nope.
No, sir.
Nope. This one has, yeah, greater ramifications than just what happens with Mike Richards.
But it's just embarrassing. Like, they commit that money and they commit those years to him, and then he does this. You know?
Yeah. It's just sort of unfortunate. And gave his brother a job, too. Like,
yeah.
Buffalo did the O'Reilly family real solid here this year.
They really did.
Like, a real solid.
I mean, a solid to the point where you might want to, you know, not have that seventh beer and then maybe hand your keys to your buddy. That's the thing you might want to do.
Call a cab.
Yeah, do whatever.
Anything other than what you did at that point.
I'll say this about it, though. I mean, I tried to not overtly make fun of the situation, although that became impossible towards the end of the post that I wrote. But I am, as per usual, you can always find something on Twitter that makes you feel stupid for not having thought of it first. And someone writing, I'm sure it was multiple people making the same joke, someone writing, Ryan, it's roll up the rim, not the rims, is pretty fantastic.
That's not bad. Then there's the other person there's someone else on Twitter that I saw retweeted a bunch who pointed out the fact that Tim Horton, the hockey player, was a former Buffalo Sabre as well and died in a drunk driving accident on the way back home after a binge night.
Yeah, that really wasn't. That wasn't one of the better jokes that I read, though.
That wasn't a knee slapper.
No, it wasn't. Way to bring the room down.
Hey, hockey! Hey, everybody! You know that rub and tug with the guy's jersey's retired? Isn't that funny and hockey cool? Wow. Wow. We're going to talk about this, like, life stuff. The guy playing the Western League. Jersey retired in Austria. A massage parlor. Come on, that's good stuff.
We have obvious good vibes coming on in a few because we're going to have Jim Nill join us to talk about the summer of Nill, in the sense that the Dallas Stars have done some great stuff, and we'll get into that stuff with him. I mean, Oduya signs today. That's obviously God bless the NHL, by the way. So today is the deadest day in sports where there's like no sports on. So bless all these teams giving us lots of stuff to talk about today. Man,
no
Kessler signs, Oduya signs, Schultz signs. We should probably start unpacking on Kessler first, because that's the contract that everyone seems to want to talk about. And I'll begin with this quote, fresh off the wire, the wire being the Anaheim Ducks Twitter feed. Get ready. Gird your loins, my friend, for this one.
Here we go.
Ryan Kessler, this isn't my last contract. I want another one after this. Right now I'm sitting here saying I won't be done.
He'll be 38.
Yeah.
And have played how many games by then?
His body right now being stuck together with tape and good feelings.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. That's, I hope that he's right. I hope that he's healthy enough throughout the entire contract to justify another one. Put me in camp skeptical, though.
6.875 AAV for Kessler. No move of the first 5 years. Limited no trade in the last final year of the contract, according to Darren Drager. A few things to unpack about this real quick. First off, stop comparing this contract to Brandon Saad's. Brandon Saad is an RFA. He has nothing to do with this contract.
Totally different situation.
Number two, with all apologies to my friend Dan Kagerski, who I openly mocked earlier on Twitter because it just made me mental when he did this. Stop comparing Ryan Kessler's contract to that of Phil Kessel. They are completely two different players. I can't even listen. I know their names are similar. I'm assuming that's why we did this.
But they're both American, so doesn't that count?
What goddamn logic can you put on comparing? Like I said, it's like comparing Ovechkin with Patrice Bergeron. They're completely different players. Even within the context of their teams, they're completely different players. And Kessel's got an 8-year contract. And Kessler has a 6-year contract. There's nothing to compare.
Different positions, different players, different points of their career.
And that's the other thing too about this. Okay, so he's making 6.875 against the cap. Contract kicks in 16-17, goes until he's 38, is it, or 39?
38. So it's 38. From 32 to 38.
Yeah. Okay, listen. He's not going to finish the contract. Okay, they're going to either buy him out or they're going to pronger him. They're going to do something because they're not going to be paying a 38-year-old $6.875 million. Okay, around the next lockout. It's not going to happen. It's just not going to happen. And so what you have to take a step back and look at this stuff. And the immediate reaction is he's going to be old. He's going to be broken down. He's already in a decline. Why on earth would he pay? Well, you're not going to pay that money to a 38-year-old. You're paying it to this guy for the next 3 years of what we assume will be Ryan Kesler-like productivity in a three-year window in which you're trying to win a cup. And if you accomplish that, bully for you, great contract, cut him loose with 2 years left. Who cares? Use the money from your merchandise sales around the cup final when you win it to fund the buyout. Because essentially what you're doing is you're trying to extend Ryan Kesler for a few years. He sure as shit isn't going to take a three-year contract. So you had to do something to get him in there and keep him in there because you need two centers to win in this league. And they've got two really good ones, two that were praised up and down a scant 2 months ago for being dominant. Mm-hmm. But now all of a sudden he's broken. He's like Abe Vigoda. He's a broken down old man.
You know who I feel bad for?
Who?
Rickard Rakell. Who sits there saying, am I ever going to get a taste of top six?
Well, somebody has to be Jordan Staal in this situation, doesn't he?
It's Rakell.
That's right. So don't trade him, because then you'll never win a cup again, according to Penguins fans.
And
I don't know if you knew that, but Jordan Staal was the thread that they pulled that unraveled the Penguins. I don't know if you knew that.
No, that's not true. And the other two bits of business they have to deal with Sulfurberg and Hagelin, who one would imagine would be Ryan Kessler's wingers. For next year.
Back up on that. You think Hagelin's going to play with Kesler not on the top line?
Patrick Maroon fits so well up there, though.
He did.
I don't know that I would, you know, goof around with that top line and get Slapperi and Maroon at all. I'd put Hagelin with Kesler and Sulfurberg in a flash. Mm. Two Swedes and an American? Hell yeah.
If Maroon doesn't work out, you obviously have a pretty damn good player to slot up there with the big two in Hagelin.
Mm-hmm.
So yep, you're saying don't pick up Hagelin in fantasy yet. Wait on it.
I would, yeah, because I don't think they would. I think they want to goof around with that top line.
Fantasy guru Jeff Merrick.
Oh man, I got asked about fantasy hockey yesterday from someone at the Sportsnet magazine. Like, do you do fantasy hockey? I'm like, no, I don't have time.
I don't have Jeff Pooley Merrick.
Yeah, no. No, I think the last hockey pool I was – actually, I know the last hockey pool I was in because I won. It was when – the Anaheim, New Jersey playoff final.
2003?
Yeah. Other than the ones that we do online, which I really don't do much in.
This makes me so sad.
The last one was 2003. Yeah.
This makes me so sad that we missed the 10-year anniversary of your last fantasy season. We didn't mark the occasion on the podcast.
It was just for playoffs, and I was picking, like, there was like 15 of us, and I think I was picking 15th, and so, you know, a lot of the big-name players and the big-name teams were already gone. I said, screw it, I'm going in. I'm going all in on the Ducks, baby. I had everybody. I had Ruchin. I had Carney. I had Correa. I had them all, man, and when they upset Detroit, it was like, holy shit. I'm going to win this freaking pool. I think I won like $2,000.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Nice.
Yeah.
Jim Nill's coming on in a second. So we should probably talk about the Stars a little bit. Do you assign – what did you say, Sam?
10 minutes. Ten minutes.
Yeah, okay. But, I mean, that's – okay. I'm going to take a deep breath here, Merrick.
What's up?
Jim Neal's going to come on in 10 minutes, according to producer Sam. Not a minute, like I said. Just to let you all know, it's 10. It's not 1. It's not the colloquial minute that I said. The number is actually 10.
A Dixie, 10 spot.
Is that how it's going to be with Sam? It's going to be... Actually, is he going to be actually guy? Actually, it's 6.753.
Sam's with us for 5 minutes and already you're blasting on the guy.
Johnny Oduya signs for 2 years and $7.5 million. It's what a little fun little do-si-do between the Blackhawks and the Dallas Stars, huh?
No kidding, eh? It's Blackhawk South.
Well, they have to be because Atlanta moved to Winnipeg, so they can't be Blackhawk South anymore. And also, Florida got rid of a lot of their Blackhawks, so now this is the new Blackhawk South.
So Patrick Sharp, Johnny Oduya, and Antti Niemi. Mm-hmm. Am I leaving out any?
No, that's it.
Three. Okay.
It's the three. But the thing I love about these moves is that you often see teams try to import winning, and import winning from rivals, right?
Mm-hmm.
But all three of these guys make complete sense from a positional standpoint, from a need standpoint. I think that's the real key.
They, you know, let go of Daly in the Sharp moves. They need a left-hand shot defenseman.
Mm-hmm.
So he slides in probably to play with, I don't know, we'll ask Jim about this, probably to play with Jason Demers.
Yep. And then also is there as the Swedish mentor to future Swede stars.
And there are a few.
Yep. I love that. Sharp gives them, because we weren't on, I don't think. The Sharp trade, I think, might have happened after the last episode we did, I want to say.
I think so, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, because I think it happened over the weekend. The Sharp trade was great. I mean, you know, the kid Johns, they get the defense, and we'll go into more of that with Nil, because I think that's been a really sort of under-reported facet of this story, is great.
Punishing hitter. Big, strong
kid. The thing that you need to do in the Western Conference is you need to have all-star talent in your top six. That's it. That's it. That's just it. I mean, if you want to beat Chicago or you want to beat Anaheim, you want to beat yourself the Kings when they get better, you want to beat yourself any of these teams that are in contention year after year, yeah. You have to have top six talent on par with them. And what Jim Nill has done in the last 3 years is compile a top six that includes a homegrown Jamie Benn, an added Tyler Seguin, an added Jason Spezza, and an added Patrick Sharp. That's pretty damn good. And that's somewhat acknowledging yeah. that even though they're not there yet, and that patience must be used on certain facets of this lineup, especially the blue line, that you need top end talent to win. And he's aggressively attained it, and it's great.
So there's no way they break up Seguin and Jamie Benn, right? So then all of a sudden, Jason Spezza now found himself a Patrick Sharp left winger?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's pretty nice. That's pretty nice. And then what, Alex Hemsky plays your second line right wing or Valeri Nichushkin? This is what makes the offseason so fun because right now Dallas is just flooded with left wingers. Flooded with left wingers.
And eight defensemen on one-way deals, by the way.
Yes. Yes.
That too.
And good young – I mean, it's not just Johns who's on the horizon too, but Honk is a really nice defenseman. On the horizon for them too. So yeah, things look pretty now. And they have about $2 billion worth of goaltenders as well. by last calculation.
We'll get into some. I was on the call with Nil before, and there's a few things that I thought were sort of interesting that he mentioned that we'll get into about him. One of them, and I want to get your opinion on it before I ask him again about it, was this notion that we are now officially in a post one single goaltender carrying the freight, post one top defensive pairing league, i.e. you have a top four, i.e. you have two goalies. And that seems to be what Nil is saying in this league right now, is that that's where we are right now. It's not this, the Henrik Lundqvist and Carey Prices are the anomalies. The Shea Webbers, and P.K. Subbans and Drew Doughty's are the anomalies. It's a top four and two goalies for the vast majority of this league.
Don't disagree, but do you pay those two goaltenders $5 million a year each?
So essentially, you're saying that there's always going to be one guy over the other. Yeah?
Call me old-fashioned, but yeah.
based on salary.
The salary experience, performance, I suppose, comes into the mix as well. But I don't see teams have done it. But then you think of the Carolina Hurricanes 2006, right? Between Gerber and Ward, right?
Mm-hmm.
That was Gerber was going to run with it. Ward steals the job. They flip-flop back and forth. And at the end, Cam Ward doesn't just take that number one spot. He wins the Conn Smythe Trophy.
True. The one that Pronger should have won.
He was great too. He really was great in that one too. I don't know that, you know, the socialist ideal of, you know, 41 games each and each making the exact same nickel can ever be a reality with this position in the NHL. Now,
I guess it's go ahead.
To the point about the depth of defensemen, don't you kind of have to make that argument when you don't have the one big stud back there, when you don't have Drew Doughty and you don't have Duncan Keith and you don't have PK Subban or Zdeno Chara or Shea Weber? You talk more the collective unit.
I don't know, maybe because that also kind of portends the notion that you're hoping that one of those pairings solidifies and becomes the top pairing, right? Like you want one of them to step forward and be that.
Yeah. Well, Klingberg, so Goligoski, right?
I think so. Yeah, I don't really buy the idea. By the way, and we'll get into it with him, but I don't buy the idea he put forth. I think Klingberg and Goligoski should play much more than Oduya, but maybe he's just saying that because he needs to, you know, match up with the Hawks are doing. And that's the other thing too, is that the Hawks emulated the Red Wings, and now Dallas is emulating the Hawks because their GM came from the Red Wings and is trying to instill a winning thing into the Dallas. So it's all very confusing. Time is a flat circle.
Interesting game of Twister you're playing right here.
Oh, yeah. Martin just mentioned the same thing on Twitter. Stars emulate Blackhawks who emulated Red Wings when Nil was there. Exactly. That's a better way of saying what I just said. So it all comes back to Detroit. Just another reason why Mike Babcock was worth $80 billion from Toronto.
And
obviously.
And Dallas was the team that produced the first moment at the draft when they took Denis Gurianov at 12. And everyone went, whoa! Like, we thought he was going in the first round, but probably between 15 and 20, and they grabbed him at 12. Because everyone's sort of like, okay, there's a few wild cards in that first round. And when Dallas jumped up, it's a ballsy move. Maybe not so much when you consider what they already have with Valeri Nichushkin. Now he has a countryman and teammate. Maybe it wasn't that surprising. But wasn't that, for you, wasn't that first sort of, oh, wow, someone's really gone off the board here moment at the draft?
Probably.
Then Boston did it a couple of picks later. Not so much with the
defenseman. Well, Boston, I mean, that's why I say probably. Like, I think what Boston ended up doing a few picks later sort of eclipsed that a little bit as far as the shock and awe portion of the draft. But essentially you're right. And you know, the other thing about Nil, I love any GM where there just seems to be a plan. There seems to be method to the madness. There doesn't seem to be this flailing about trying to grab what you can and make whatever statement you can to your fan base that you're trying hard. Like, there seriously is a plan here. It's working, at least on paper. Can't speak to what's going to happen next year, but it ain't the Jamie and Tyler show coming in next year, I'll tell you that. There's a lot of support on that team, not only from the players that are going to be a year older, but in the players that they bought into. And Oduya said it, like, the team is on the cusp of contention, but it is going to take a number of these young players making a leap that maybe not all of them are prepared to make, is the thing.
But, so who has to jump up and have the big year for Dallas? Because Sagan, take it to the bank. Jamie Benn, take it to the bank.
Nichushkin. I think he's got to be great next year. I think he could be, but I think they need that talent. Secondary scoring. Yeah.
Yeah.
Klingberg can't take a step back. He has to continue. You know, the thing, the phone was breaking up a little bit, but it sounded like, Jesus, we can just ask him in like 2 seconds. I'm sorry, 2 minutes, Sam. We could ask him about how Klingberg, I think he said, kind of reminded him of Erik Karlsson a little bit.
That's high praise.
Very high praise, yeah.
We'll
see if what he says to that, but that's pretty, very high praise. Did you think Klingberg deserved the Calder over Ekblad?
No, I was Team Ekblad all the way.
No, all the way.
Not to say that Klingberg didn't have a fantastic year. He did. But in some ways, he was this year's version of the Minnesota defenseman. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Everyone said, hold on a second. Should we have not given that guy a little more love?
and there, I think there's going to be some of that going forward, but I also don't think that anyone should regret Ekblad winning the Calder. Well, here's the thing we didn't talk about yet, by the way. What did you think of the acquisition of Trevor Daley for the Blackhawks?
I know the analytics guys can't stand it. I know. But
which is
mean,
very, which is interesting because the Blackhawks are usually one of the teams praised for their analytics department.
I think it's a good move for Daley. I mean, you just can't help. I mean, he'll play with Nicholas Chalmerson, get power play time as well. So I think it's a home run move for Trevor Daley. I really do.
Here's a home run move on the part of our podcast and producer Sam. Getting Jim Nill on a day when everybody's talking about the Dallas Stars.
Yeah.
Hey, Jim. Welcome back to the podcast, sir. It's Greg and Jeff, and thanks for making time for us today on Johnny Oduya Day.
No, thank you. How's everybody doing? Good summers?
We're doing good. You've been busy. Any plans to, I don't know, take some time off, Jim? I mean, it's been go, go, go for your office.
Yeah, well, no, I think that's just that's the hockey business nowadays. It's the summers are your busy time, but we're slowing down now. I think the rest of the league is also, but we're happy the way things are shaped up so far.
How did the Oduya deal come together?
Well, would we, you go back to we had our pro meetings back in early June, and that we knew that he was a potential free agent, so we had him ranked in there. He was very high on our list, and when we started to look at, when I started to talk to Chicago about doing the deal with them to get Sharp, it became very evident that Daley was going to have to be part of the deal. And I knew that if I was going to lose Daley, I'm going to have to replace him. And so that's when we kind of swung around the other way and started to do some research on Oduya. I kept in touch with their agents right from the free agent period, and we were able to make the deal work.
Had to be a left-hand shot, D?
No, we're pretty flexible that way. We have quite a few options, actually. We're finally starting to get our righties in our system, so that's coming around. So when you can get a player with that much experience and pedigree, I'm a big resume guy, and when you can put people in your dressing room that are winners, I think that's very important.
The term usage was used a lot in assessing how Trevor Daley was for you, and a lot of fans and media looked at his time on ice, thought it was maybe too high for his skill set and feel like he might be used in a different way in Chicago. Oduya, meanwhile, played about 20 minutes a night, played with Yarmolson, clearly second pairing behind whoever Duncan Keith is playing with. Do you kind of see Oduya being cast in the same role with the Stars, or do you see him maybe picking up a bit more ice time than he had in Chicago?
I think he's going to probably stay about the same. What we're excited about, and the reason we had him kind of as one of our top guys as free agent, he plays a real safe, steady game. We've got some high-end skill guys coming. The Klingbergs and these guys, it's high-end, Honka we got coming. These guys are explosive, offensive type of players. You need to have the right mix, and we liked what Johnny Oduya brings. He's a steady veteran back there. He's a first-pass guy. He goes back, gets pucks, makes the first play. He's not worried about points. And I think that's going to be a good learning tool for our young guys. A lot of our young guys, the Nemes and these guys, they need to see the way he plays and understand sometimes keeping it simple is more effective. So that's what excites us about Johnny Oduya.
Where's Jamie Oleksiak at in his development? Large man, great wingspan, as we all know. What's the expectation of Oleksiak now?
Well, we're excited about him. He's going to be in our top eight, and he's going to be fighting for for that 5, 6, 7 spot in our lineup. It's going to be good. We know there's going to be injuries. You start out every year saying, okay, I've got these 6 or 7 guys. We started out last year, and we lost Gonchar for 2 months out of training camp, and then we lost Patrick Nemeth for the whole year, third game of the season, and that's around the whole league. You just know there's going to be injuries. So he's a big part of our future. He's a big, big man. We think with him and Johns, it gives us, Jamie Oleksiak 6'7", Johns is 6'4". They're both about 225, 230. It gives us two big men that can skate and handle the puck pretty well. So we're excited about the potential of them down the road being with our team.
I know there was some criticism last year about the blue line and going into the season as young as you did, and maybe that short-circuiting things in some way as far as being a playoff team. The top six is so damn good right now. Do you think that the young players can make the leap this year that maybe some of them didn't make last year and make this blue line playoff-worthy?
Yeah, you don't know till they do it. But, yeah. History shows these guys. We've got guys that have played, we've got the Lindell kid who's played in the World Championships for Finland as one of their top defensemen. you know, history just shows that if you start playing at these levels at 20 years of age, that you are going to continue to develop. Now, they have to do it, and that's what we're banking on, but we think we got some great young guys, you know, between Lindell, Honka, Johns, Backman, and then we got Jokke Pekka, Nemeth, Oleksiak. We think, you know, out of those six, seven guys, three or four of them end up being pretty high-end players, and that's what you need. You know, last year at this time, nobody knew who John Klingberg was. John Klingberg was playing over in Sweden. Nobody knew who he was, and all of a sudden he shows up in November after playing a month down in Texas in our farm team, and he becomes he's on the all-rookie team. And so we think we got some good pieces coming. The biggest thing is, and it's the toughest part of this business, is the word patience. And you can't rush it, and they're going to come along at their own speed sometimes.
I was on the conference call before, and I apologize. I think it was a problem with my phone. Did you compare Klingberg a little bit to Erik Karlsson, or was that a different comparison?
Yeah, I didn't. That's what everybody, you know, every time we get on the phone and people keep bringing it up, and that's what Johnny Duja did. Johnny Duja said that he thinks he might be the next Karlsson, and he does have that skill set, and he's got the potential to be that type of player. He came in, like I said, came to our team 1st of November and never looked back, and he really changed our whole back end. And once he settled in by December, that's when our team really started to take off. You know, we dug a hole early, and it was really more of a team mentality that we weren't good enough defensively. And once we understood that, from December 13th on, our team was as good as anybody in the league almost.
You know, I can't help but thinking, too, and this has been referenced already with the signing of Oduya, that he's there to help specifically players like, if not exactly, John Klingberg. Not unlike your previous organization, the Detroit Red Wings, when Lidstrom came over, the first person you put him with was a safe, steady hand of Brad McCrimmon.
Yeah, no, defense is probably the toughest position to play. Other than goaltending, it's probably the toughest position to play in the NHL. And, you know, you need that mentoring is important, the patience is important. And anytime you can add somebody that's won Stanley Cups, has been in Olympics, has been in World Championships, they're good players. And there's a reason they're winners. And they don't have to change what they do. They do things right. And I think Johnny Adui is one of those guys.
Over on the other big transaction, the Patrick Sharp deal, how early were you in on Sharp? Was this a case? Because a lot of us heard an asking price for Sharp that was pretty damn high early in the offseason. Was this a waiting game for you with the Blackhawks to see if maybe it was going to get to a place where you felt more comfortable pulling the trigger?
Yeah, I'd say a little bit of waiting game. We talk all the time. The GMs, we're talking daily with other teams. And I talked to Chicago way back after they, you know, won the Stanley Cup and at the draft and that, and you know it's a cap world, and in the end they were gonna have to make some moves, and it really came down to being a hockey trade. I think they had some choices, probably other choices, do other things with picks or whatever, but in the end Stan needed a person to be in his top four. He was gonna be losing somebody on his back end, and we had the right fit for him. He had the right fits for us, and in the end, it ended up being a hockey trade that both teams could live with.
And we were just talking before you came on, the automatic beneficiary of that deal, one would assume, would be Jason Spezza, as I don't think you have any designs to split up Sagan and Ben.
Well, we get lots of flexibility. Sharp can play either wing, so we could end up putting him with Sagan and Ben. He can play the left side if you want to put him with Hemsky and Spezza. The bonus in all this for us, and it's something that, you know, a lot of people wouldn't understand, they didn't see our team lots. We lost Val Nichushkin, yep, third game into the season, along with Patrick Nemeth, two of our brighter young spots, young guys. Nikushkin's a 6'4" power forward, and he's going to be back. He's back healthy now. He ended up playing the last three games in the year. It was very good. And him and Spezza really hit it off. They had a special chemistry in that short period of time. So we've got lots of flexibility between Nikushkin and Sharp. I think they can flip-flop back and forth, left side or right side. So we got lots of flexibility. We'll see where the chemistry builds and go from there. You know, the exciting part with Sharp is we now got somebody, you know, he's got a rocket for a shot, and on the power play, I know he's the guy that used to beat us all the time whenever we played Chicago in the power play. He was shooting bombs, and now with him and Klingberg working together, that gives us a pretty potent top two guys up on the blue line on the power play.
You mentioned Nichushkin a second ago, and I can't help but, you know, going back to the draft a couple of weeks and drawing a line between Nichushkin and the pick that surprised a lot of people, yours truly included, Denis Gurianov. Should we draw a line between these two? You see these two as complementary players to each other somewhere down the road?
Well, they're both, you know, they're kind of almost similar players, except one guy's more of a passer and the other guy's more of a shooter. Gurianov's got a rocket for a shot. He's a big, strong, powerful guy, much like Nichushkin. So we're excited. We think, you know, when we went to the draft, I asked the scouts, you know, when we had our list there, I said, you know, where's this guy fit in? And they said, well, if he's North American, he's probably in the top five. And that was enough for me. I know my scouting staff well, and they know their players. And in the end, he was a guy that our scouts came back after tournament November and said he was one of the best players that they've seen in the draft. And so we kept a close eye on him. And like I say, if it wasn't for probably the Russian factor, probably goes higher. But we're probably sitting in the right spot of the draft. That's kind of where the cutoff line was, and we were happy to get him.
A lot of the Blackhawks fans that reacted to the Sharp trade were just as upset about losing Stephen Johns as they were about seeing Patrick Sharp go. This kid evidently had a lot of support amongst Blackhawks fans. What can you tell us as far as what you like about him and where he fits in?
Well, I've known Stephen for a long time, going back to the under-18 team in Ann Arbor with the U.S. under-18 team and then the World Juniors and all that. I've seen him since he was 18 years of age. I've always liked him, watched him develop in Notre Dame, and then watched him a little bit this season, and then we ended up playing Rockford in the playoffs, and he was by far the best player on the ice. He manhandled us. He was the key reef, scored the winning goal to knock us out in overtime. But just he's a physical specimen. He's 6'3", 6'4", 225 pounds, plays a very robust physical game, kind of a different dimension that we don't have. And, you know, in my conversations with Chicago, if I was going to move one of my defensemen, it was to get a different type of defenseman. So for the deal to happen, he had to be part of it. If he wasn't going to be part of it, the trade wasn't going to happen. And, you know, they needed Daly. They needed somebody to replace the players that are using. And so in the end, that was a piece that they had to give up. And I was willing to give up Daly if I was going to get that piece.
Jim, last one for me, and maybe the answer is Chicago Blackhawks because, Stanley Cup champions and all. But is there a team that you look at and you say, we're measuring our squad against how well we play against Team X? And if so, who is that team?
No, you're right. It's Chicago Blackhawks. You know, we talk. They've done a great job. They're the modern day Detroit Red Wings where I came from. They've done a great job of drafting, a great job of developing. They've managed their system well. You know, who they sign, who they don't sign. They've made the right trades at the right time, and I got nothing but respect for Stan Bowman and his staff for the job they've done. It's not easy to win, and it's not easy to stay on top and do it a few years in a row. And they've done that, and we think that we're getting to be, we're not there, but we think we're in pace with where our players are at. You know, the Bens and Sagans remind me of Taze and Kane when they were 22, 23, 24 years of age. And I think that's where we're trying to get there. I don't know if we're there. We're getting close, I think. And that's what we're trying to hit with our team right now.
And last one for me, on the conference call today, you made mention of the fact that you thought a lot of the younger players on this roster are going to be sponges for what a guy like Oduya brings to the table, a guy like Sharp, the fact that Niemi's won a ring. You know, the rings in the room thing has been tried by a lot of teams in this league, and it hasn't always worked out insofar as setting an example, transferring that knowledge to younger players. What's the key? What's the key to bringing in these guys that have been successful elsewhere and having them give the winning virus to your other players, let's say?
Well, I think a big part of it depends where your team's at. You know, you can bring those guys in, and if your team's not good enough skill-wise or depth-wise or whatever, it doesn't matter. What you can only do so much. But I think our team's at the right spot. I think we're ready to take next step. And what's the next step? The next step is winning consistently. You know, it's getting the playoffs consistently, doing those type of things. I think our team's close to that, and I think these guys bring that value to them. And the other part is, these are guys that have done it more than once. These aren't guys, the Sharps and the Duyas aren't guys that just won one cup and they've been in and out type of thing. These guys have won consistently for the last 6, 7, 8 years. Sharps won 3 cups. Nadui's won two. Niemi's won one cup. You know, these guys, you know, I get back to Niemi. He was in San Jose. They've been one of the top teams the last 7-8 years. They were chasing us in Detroit all those years and chasing Chicago. So these are guys that have won consistently, and there's a reason that happens. And they've been a part of that. I think that just that ends up affecting your dressing room.
Well, thanks for explaining all this. Yeah, you've made our summer so much fun so far.
Yeah,
with all the things you've done.
Well, sit back and relax now, and enjoy your summer a little bit. And it's a pleasure speaking to you guys.
One last thing, though, man. If you have a second, what did you think of 3-on-3 getting passed?
I think it's great. It's going to be interesting. Yeah. I want to see. It's been a great product in the American League. What's going to be interesting to watch is we have the best coaches in the world, and these guys are the best for a reason. They're very smart, and it's going to be interesting to see where it goes. There's always going to be some things. Something's going to happen on 3-on-3. I remember seeing some instances in the American Hockey League, like once a player breaks a stick, like, and you can't get to your bench. Well, now it's a 3-on-2 all the time. There's nothing you can do. You're in trouble. So those things are going to happen. But I want to see early in the 3-on-3. You know, our team's going to sit back and just kind of wait for a chance. Are they going to be aggressive? It's going to be interesting to watch how it all takes place. And I know the coaches are all sitting there. They've picked the brains of every American Hockey League coach. They're picking brains of guys in Europe. These guys are good. They're smart. It's going to be interesting to see how teams approach this. That's going to be the most fun.
What does your gut tell you? Two defensemen, one forward, two forwards, one defenseman?
I think you're going to see sometimes three forwards, to tell you the truth.
Yeah,
I think you're going to see a lot of that. I depend on the team. You know, if you're a, you know, if you got Duncan, Keith, or Doughty and these guys, they're probably never coming off the ice. Carlson's those type of guys. It's commission to see. It's going to be. But it's, I know one thing: when you get a scoring chance and you happen to miss a net, I can tell you right now it's coming back the other way awful fast, and that usually is a 3-on-2. You know, the other thing I want to watch, and we just tried it. Our development camp is we had a scrimmage, so we tried some different things, and kind of the old European way. I remember playing when I played against Russians in the Olympics and stuff. They would play if it's 5-on-5, they'd hang one guy out by the red line and kind of play a 5-on-4. Is there going to be some team that's going to leave somebody out to center ice and let the other guys play kind of the 3-on-2 and wait for a break and spring a guy loose? It's commission to see.
So we'll call that the beer league effect on the, yeah, the NHL.
It's going to be exciting. I think it's great for our sport. You know, the shooters have been effective, but I think this is more a little bit more hockey skill type of thing. And I just know things happen. Watch the American League. You break a stick, somebody misses a net on a rush, or somebody falls down. Yep. It changes awful fast. It's coming back at you. So it'd be
100%.
Good.
Jim, thanks for your time.
All right, guys.
Stuff.
Yeah, take
thanks
care.
Thanks for doing it. Jim Nill, general manager of the Dallas Stars. The broken stick thing is fascinating, and there was, I don't think they do it anymore, but there was a couple of teams in the OHL that on just regular penalty kills wouldn't allow their players to use composite sticks. There was like a batch of wooden sticks that you had to use when you were killing a penalty, because if your stick breaks, essentially, you're taking yourself off the ice, and now you're two men down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Don't know that'll ever happen in the NHL, but... Broken sticks really affect someone.
And the thing I keep hearing from and talking to some coaches around the draft, the thing I keep hearing is, you know, there is going to be this push to play conservatively in the 3-on-3. Not every coach is going to go for it. I mean, we all know this to be true. Defense wins championships. Even the 4-on-4 can get bogged down in systems and things like that. But everything in the 3-on-3 is so accentuated. Every mistake, every broken stick, a flub shot, every little thing that goes wrong can be a chance the other way. And that's the hope. The hope is that as measured as you want to be in the 3-on-3, there's going to be something you didn't plan on that happens, and then everything goes to hell. And that's kind of what you're hoping for.
Your instinct as a coach, I know, of course, is always, okay, what can we do defensively with the 3-on-3? But I talked to a bunch of guys at our gym that play in the American League, and they'll tell you it's as close to uncoachable as we have in the game right now. Like, it's honestly as close to pond hockey as we have. Let's just go play river, boys. Woo. Just throw the puck in the corner and let's go. And it's exciting, and it's, you know, hair on fire, and it's all that. It's fun. And the nice thing about it is it's really hard to coach. You just come down to, okay, who's got the best players and who's got a little bit of luck? Fun. Imagine that.
Or who has Sidney Crosby, Evgeny Malkin, and Phil Kessel? Come down to that too.
That's not bad. Wouldn't it be nice to see a game with? Wouldn't it be nice to see a game where there are no coaches?
You've often said this, sir, and I disagree.
Just one. Just give me one game. The coaches are banned.
You know who wouldn't want that, sir? The fourth
coaches.
Line. The fourth line wouldn't want that.
That's a good point. Yeah, they really wouldn't.
Hey, Sid, Phil, we haven't gotten out since the first. Is there any way we can get out there? We could help.
You still here? You still here? Well, give me some tape.
Justin Schultz signs.
Show me year for Schultz, right? One year deal, avoid arbitration, 3.9 according to Friedman.
3.9 million.
3.9 million. 1 year deal.
So Jason Brough from Pro Hockey Talk sees the Oilers' potential top six breaking down as Sakara, Fain, Klefbom, Schultz, Ferentz, Griba. Now, then you also have Darnell Nurse, and you also have Nitkinen. Yeah, so
Nikita. Yeah, the can't play in the NHL. You can't.
Right.
Oh, he's such a bad.
Well, here you go.
Oh my.
There's
God.
A problem there, isn't there?
I know the ankle injury and all that, but oh, jeez.
It's not a bad defense there.
It's a lot better.
It's better.
Mm-hmm. And they're creating competition now. Now you're not just handing Darnell Nurse a job. Here you go, kid. Welcome to the NHL. He'll probably start the season, and nothing wrong with it, in Bakersfield.
Come on.
Hey. Okay, well, whose spot is he taking?
Well, I think the real issue is this. When you decide to unleash Darnell Nurse on an unsuspecting league, do you really want him to be on the third pairing, or do you want him to come in more fully formed and put him as a second pairing defenseman?
Yeah, so put him in the American League for a spell.
Right. Okay, if you want to make the argument that he couldn't come in and be a 2D for them, I'm fine with, or I should say a 3 or 4D for them. I'm fine with that. If that's your argument. Because I don't want him playing third pairing. I don't think it helps. I want him thrown in the fire.
Here's a question for you, and they did this last year with Nurse. They did this with Hunt as well, even though it was pretty crucial for Edmonton to have a good start, and that West Coast road trip just destroyed them. Do they goof around with giving kids, like, okay, we're going to let you play 8 games, but get close to your 10 and then send you back to junior?
Nah.
Does Edmonton do that this year? I mean, it did that last year, much to Dallas Aiken's chagrin.
Nah, I don't think so. Do you think they will?
I don't think so, no. And that's why I think, unless Nurse comes in and blows everyone's socks off, and listen, the guy's got the skill to do so, everything pretty much to me, you know, seems set with the Oilers. Outside of one of the big questions, which is, where's last year's third overall draft pick Leon Draisaitl going to play?
An excellent question. And many of us thought it would be like New Jersey, but it actually isn't. He's going to stay there.
I'm still not sold that he will long term. But, over on the wing is the obvious. Because Anton Lander is your third center. Mark Letestu's not going anywhere. Mm-hmm. I don't know that I see room down the middle for the big German. I don't. It's got to be a winger or somewhere else that
he's got to be a winger.
They can get an asset from and use Leon Draisaitl.
Draisaitl.
Man, he was so good in junior. Oh God, he was. It took him about 15 games to kind of shake off the fact that it's not 5-star hotels anymore and riding on private jets. But thank God, was he dominant at times. Holy smokes. God, was Draisaitl good.
One more thing on ye old free agency before we get to a little World Cup of Hockey thing and then going postal. Don't they star Cody Franzen?
Holy smokes. Okay, I thought he was going to end up in Dallas. That's why I asked the question about right-hand shot, left-hand shot. Because I didn't think that they really cared a whole lot, and Cody Franzen's a right hand shot, but they brought in Johnny Oduya as a left hand shot to fill that last hole. Whew. music slowing down and running out of chairs. Where's Cody Franzen go? I don't know. I thought Dallas. I really thought
well,
Cody
we thought
Franzen was going to Dallas.
Every one of their moms said that Buffalo was in on Oduya, but that's a very different kind of defenseman than Franzen is. Franzen's looking for big years and big bucks. And I don't know where, I don't know. Like you said, there ain't a lot of chairs left in places where he wants to play. That's the other key, too.
Yeah,
he seems like the kind of guy who doesn't necessarily want to bite the bullet and go, you know, sign somewhere he doesn't want to play.
Is he going to take a one-year deal somewhere?
If he could get to it before Christian Ehrhoff does, who's going to clearly sign a one-year deal. I mean,
again,
that's the other thing. Oh, no, he wants one, though. Like
yeah,
Ehrhoff's
no,
people have said that he wants a one-year deal. So if now your market is not who's going to pay me long-term, big-term, and now your deal is who's going to pay me for 1 year, well, get in line, son, because there's someone in front of you that I think is, frankly, a more desirable defenseman than he is on a one-year deal, Ehrhoff.
Yeah.
True or false?
On a one-year deal? Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
That is.
Yeah.
Ehrhoff going back to Buffalo?
Could he? He could, I guess.
Right?
Does it do for what purpose though? Are they trying to contend?
Well, that's just it. I mean, he's cup mercenary now, right? He's the new Marian Hossa. Mm-hmm. He's just going to keep trying out teams until he wins the Stanley Cup.
How about one million over one in Chicago?
Yeah, sure.
Why
sure.
not? World Cup of Hockey. It was reported by another Canadian sports network that the NHL is asking for $8 million from a title sponsor to sponsor the jerseys of all the teams in the tournament, and they can't find anybody at that price.
So let me get this straight. So there are – I'm going to take this conversation in another direction. So there are ads on practice jerseys, true mm-hmm. or false?
That's
there
true.
There will be ads on the joint venture that is the World Cup of Hockey between the NHL and its Players Association.
All
the ads on those jerseys.
Yes.
And we're somehow of the naive belief that this isn't one day going to bleed into the National Hockey League of the Arts.
No, and I'll tell you why. Because practice jerseys and World Cup of Hockey jerseys are not sacred. We all know that the NHL sweater is sacred.
To who?
To everybody.
I'll tell you what, man. If I'm a player and I'm looking at my escrow payments. Uh-huh. And I'm looking at, well, hang on, I put like a little Arby's logo on my shoulder and all of a sudden my escrow is a little bit lower. What do I care? It's
that's
coming.
It's
coming, and you know who's fighting it off? Because it's been presented before and this person has always pushed it away. Love him or not,
yeah.
Gary Bettman's been the main reason why there are not ads on the jerseys.
And they tried to take fighting away. Who was there? Gary was there. And they tried to put ads on our jerseys. Who was there? Gary was
Gary
there.
Gary was there. Yeah. He's made that point countless times. I know he's sour on the idea, but I can't see how, you know, in this sports environment, if there's money on the table for ads on jerseys, how the NHL eventually doesn't take it.
And I know it's hard to believe because they've literally sold every other friggin' thing in this league.
Yeah, I know. It's like, oh, it's so sick. There's ads on the freaking ice.
They found
the
a way.
The jerseys are for sale.
They found a way to put advertising on the glass with special
yes.
effects.
Yes, yes, that changes throughout the period. Don't give me the, oh, this is sacred. No, 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 no.
They invented technology to put more advertising on the ice. Come on now.
And we don't think there's not going to be like a little Starbucks logo with the Seattle Sasquatches or Easter eggs or whatever they're going to be called.
I hope. Well, the interesting thing about this advertising thing with the World Cup of Hockey was, it wasn't simply going to be a patch on the jersey like it is for a practice mm-hmm. jersey. The title sponsor of the teams was going to – it was going to be like a Winter Classic logo. Their logo or name was going to be incorporated into the crest of the team. That's the interesting wrinkle here. It's not just simply a Visa patch on the shoulder. It is,
right.
You know – it is Sweden by Pepsi. You know, it's like that kind of thing.
Powered by Pepsi.
Powered by Pepsi, yes, exactly.
Powered by Pepsi.
That's the thing, which I think is kind of crazy. But then again, and I also said to myself, how would that affect jersey sales? Like, it would Powered by Pepsi be on the jersey that you buy if you were buying a Team Canada
jersey? Of course.
Jersey?
Yeah, or it wouldn't be authentic, 100%.
And then would people care? And I don't think they would, because people buy European soccer jerseys all the time where it's bingo.
Just an advertisement. Bingo. Right. It's just an ad. It's just an ad with the team's colors.
Right.
Oh, yeah. 100, I've gone out the door and around the block with this argument with various people at various times. Mm-hmm. And it comes back to that. You just get used to it. We don't. When you watch old timey hockey games, what's one of the first things you notice? Hey, clean boards. Mm-hmm. That's almost jarring.
Esa Pedersen writes in, let's remember there are ads on the goal nets in Finland. I'm surprised there aren't ads. I guess they can't put ads on the posts because it might mess with the shooter's vision, would be the argument, right?
That would be the argument, yeah.
Potentially.
Remember,
is that one of the reasons why they nixed that awesome idea by those goalies? By Marty and the goalies a few years back, where they wanted to put advertising on their uniforms. Remember that? They wanted to put advertising on their pads, right?
It's funny because when Rich Winter represented Grant Fuhr and he was in St. Louis, he had a deal with Pepsi to turn his goalie pads into Pepsi cans. And the league shot it down.
Hmm. Could you imagine how much advertising Henrik Lundqvist could fit on his pads? He looked like a NASCAR.
Whatever are you trying to insinuate, Greg Wyshynski? He wears a standard goaltending pad, just
He's
like all the
down.
Other goalies.
Oh
in
yeah.
The
oh yeah. Oh, it's literally like looking like Billy Smith out there. I mean, it's almost the same thing those guys used to wear.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, yeah. Tiny little Kelly booty pads. Yeah, sure. Okay.
All right. So World Cup hockey coming up once again. I say this again. I know that the planning is happening. I know that by September we'll know colors and jerseys and some roster stuff and some coaching stuff and everything else is the target for all this stuff. I say again, pirate flag, you either give it to Team Europe or you give it to the young guns.
I want to see a skull
and crossbones for one of those teams. You either bestow it upon Team Kopitar
I think that's Euro team.
How awesome would that be? That automatically makes you care exponentially more for a team that is going to get waxed in this tournament.
But they'll become, you know, they'll become what Latvia always was until recent history.
Right.
Which was the lovable losing team.
Right.
That you can't help but getting behind and ultimately they end up having the best fans.
Yeah, they'll be an Ivy League team in March Madness. You know, high hockey IQ. Just getting curb stomped by Duke. Yeah, that's exactly what it's going to be. All right, since we're only doing this podcast like once a week during the summer for the most part. So it happens that we do this podcast on Wednesdays, which means it happens to be time for a Wednesday favorite.
You want to do a mailbag segment every week? It's time to look deep.
I wonder if this is the long one or the short edited one. Let's find out. Oh, it's a short one. Sam comes through.
Not that deep.
We Money.
Answer your mail.
PuckDaddyBlog at yahoo.com. On Twitter at Jeff Merrick and at Wyshynski. We're going postal on Merrick versus Wyshynski.
See, long before I snarked at Sam about correcting my time estimation, you had already snarked about him using the long intro for going postal a few weeks back.
I did.
It greatly upset you.
Well, you know my theory on this show.
What's that?
All production is bad production. I just want voices. That's it.
I know. And
completely the opposite way of media. No whistles, no bells, none of it.
And to placate your ego, we've now gotten rid of the intro. Like Mark Cole.
Oh yeah, that's
literally has probably 75 intros in the hopper that we no longer play because we just got rid of the intro.
I know. God bless him, too. He's really talented. Some of those intros are freaking awesome.
They were. But now they're lost in the archives. Forget it.
No more intros? We're just done? Just you and me yammering on like two old hens?
Based on the evidence, the intro's gone the way of the illegal forward pass.
It's gone the way of our news segment. What was our news segment called? Remember we did that in the first year?
Wasn't it Puck Headlines?
Puck Headlines. There it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, we played Frank Zappa's Peaches on Regalia.
Right, exactly.
as the music bed. That's right.
I branded it for the Puck Headlines that we have on the blog. You know.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, that was that was back when Yahoo and Sportsnet had a healthy interest in the show.
Well, let's not even pretend. Come on.
It's nice that they put us on their websites. They're super popular websites, right?
It's cool, yeah.
Yeah,
we appreciate
cool.
It. It's nice. We appreciate it. But you know what?
We gave away some Sportsnet swag on the show. That was nice, too.
Yeah, I think that's just Maddie stole some stuff. Give it a podcast. Although, it is, I will say this, though. It is kind of nice being left alone to do something.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I don't know what it's like for you on the Puck Daddy blog, but for this podcast, you know, outside of a couple comments here and there about, oh, hey, I heard you had Jim Nill on, how'd the interview go? No one talks to me about the podcast. It's never in any press releases that we send out. I don't even think it's in my bio. I think the only thing that I have it on is my Twitter feed.
Let me put it this way. There's actually a Yahoo Sports Radio. It's national. It's a national network of radio stations branded by Yahoo, my employer.
No.
They recently sent out a press release announcing that they're going to have a weekly hockey show on this network.
Really?
Yes.
Come on. Well, who's doing it? That's great.
I'm saying I couldn't be happier that hockey has a national presence. But have they ever
come to
me and said, hey, you already have this product and you're part of the family. Would there be a way for us to utilize this on our network, say, at a point in the day in which no one's listening? It's never happened at all. And now I literally get a press release from somebody to me asking me if I want to write about a hockey radio show on Yahoo. I'm just like, when does Yahoo write about my hockey radio show? When does that happen?
Wow, that's fantastic. Now, are you at liberty to say who's doing it?
Like, I honestly, none of the names really stuck with me, and I'm sorry that.
Okay.
Let me see if I can find it real quick. Right. Before I do that, let me ask you the first going postal, then I'll locate it.
All right.
Paul Goffberg writes in, or Goffberg, or Goofberg.
Oh.
Because his handle is Goofball666. Which half of the NHL has gotten better in the offseason, the West or the East? Random hobo Utah Phillips.
My knee jerk is to say the West has gotten better. And you look at, you know, even just most recently, all the moves that Dallas has made. But, I mean, if you want to go through it, Chicago got weaker. Could argue by losing Beauchemin, Anaheim got weaker. I'm trying to think of who the heavyweights are. The St. Louis Blues just re-upped their big boy. Traded TJ Oshie.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Did St. Louis get better?
No, they didn't get better. You think they did?
They're a little more Ken Hitchcock style by bringing in the players. Well, bring in Trey Brouwer from Washington.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's a really good question. I probably shouldn't just give a flippant answer. So, I don't know. Who do you think got better?
I think that the East got better in specific places. I think that Washington's better. And I think the Penguins are better. And I think that the Blue Jackets are better. I think there's steady improvement in a lot of places in the East.
Yeah.
But, I mean, overall...
Hang on. Pittsburgh get better?
I think so. I mean, I think there needs to be other dominoes that fall, but I think they've gotten better. You don't think so?
I don't know. The blue line is the big one for me.
Sure. You got a steady Eddie. Yeah, you're better. Marc-Andre Fleury back there, though.
A much better Marc-Andre Fleury. Mm-hmm. He did not get as much respect as he should have for the turnaround season that he had.
I agree.
Which I don't think is a one and done because stylistically he's a different goaltender.
Tuesdays from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. And then hockey this weekend from 12 to 2 p.m. Eastern Standard. That's prime real estate there. It's like during college football and stuff. Paul Cuthbert, owner of Active Hockey, and Mike Carver, an evening producer at WFAN in New York.
When does this start?
This starts September 1st.
You going to write about it?
Of course I'll write about it. I write about everything. It seems like this might have been something that existed and then like they bought it to Yahoo. And I don't know. I'll find it. You think they're buying time? Because that's a thing that happens, right?
That happens, yeah. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know how that deal would work. I don't know. But that does, and yeah, and then the way that works is, and it's a tough slog. You bring along your own advertisers. I did that with the Live Audio Wrestling Show years ago. Mm-hmm. Bought time off, where were we? Oh, at the Fan. And then I think we bought time too at 6:40. Viewer's Choice, pay-per-view was our main sponsor. It's a tough slog.
And like,
it really
I'm,
is. It's a tough
slog. This isn't a kick in the balls or anything. It's just like, it's just weird. It's weird. It's weird when your employer has this other thing that's not really part. I mean, it's kind of its own thing, so that's mm-hmm. part of the reason why I don't really care. But it's just weird that no one's ever said, like, "Oh yeah, by the way, we have this super popular podcast that if you're looking for hockey content for your radio network, like, we could probably give that to you."
Right.
I don't know. It's sort of weird.
Yeah, you know what? This is because I know Paul Cuthbert because I was on his show a bunch of times. That is one that existed before, and then I don't know either
Yahoo bought it or if Paul,
they're buying airtime. I don't know.
And I think I've had interactions with Paul too.
Yeah, he's a good dude.
He's a good dude. Yeah. Now that you mention it, name does ring a bell now. Yeah, I'm not cheesed off or anything. I'm sure the show's gonna be great or is great. It's kind of weird.
How narcissistic are we right now?
That's just being overlooked. Just saying. You know,
like we drop such pearls of hockey wisdom on this podcast, someone would turn their head.
All right. John Cozera writes in, does Greg know about milk in a bag? It's one of the most Canadian things ever, a good old sac de lot. Yeah. I'm horrified by it and at the same time very curious. Do I know about milk in a bag?
Yeah,
no, but I imagine it's probably self-explanatory. It's instead of a carton of milk, a bag of milk?
Yeah, I just haven't bought milk in I don't know how many years, but you could buy it in, like, I think other packs of two or packs of three.
You'd be
surprised.
Bag of
milk is common.
At home, at least, and in certain coffee shops, I have been drinking almond milk with all of my coffee.
Yeah, I don't like almond milk in coffee. Ugh. But, hey, good for you, man. That's good stuff.
Yeah, that's what I get for trying to be fucking healthy. Jeff,
I like almond milk in cereal. I like almond milk in a smoothie.
Oh, wait, and John has a question about you. Since you're vegan and all, I'm not sure you're impacted by this. Do you consume a vegan-friendly milk alternative that is also in a bag?
Don't drink much soy milk. Stay away from a lot of soy, actually. But almond milk, to Greg's point, I do have with cereal.
Do you get a sweetener? No,
that's in a carton. No, zero sugar.
No sweetener.
No.
Lexi hates poetry.
Hey, Lexi, she's back like a vertebrae.
If Crosby, Stamkos, Ovechkin, Tavares, Malkin, Taves, and McDavid were in the same draft, who would go first round overall, and then who would have been the following picks? So she says pick any year post 2005 to now, but I mean, imagine we'd go now, right? Just to make it interesting. All right. Oh God, this is a tough question, man.
This is a hard one.
Crosby first.
Here's a question we were talking about. Before you do that, here's a question we were talking about. At the Memorial Cup, John Shannon brought it up. Really interesting one. If the Pittsburgh Penguins offered the Edmonton Oilers Sidney Crosby for their first overall pick, should they have taken it?
Yeah. Well.
Nah, see, I say no.
Which is bizarre, because
freaking Sidney Crosby.
Yeah, my first. Wait a second. Who would say no?
Edmonton.
Edmonton would say no?
No, I say, if you're Edmonton and Pittsburgh offers you Sidney Crosby in exchange for the first overall pick,
you say yes.
You do, eh? I say, I would say no.
Are you out of your mind? Of course you say yes.
No, I wouldn't.
That's really depending on the banking in on promise than reality.
100%, but you know, with Sidney Crosby, he's still obviously one of the most elite players in the NHL, but we no longer call him a young man in the league.
No.
Injuries are always a concern slash consideration.
Exactly, and I agree. That's why you shouldn't bank on potential like you do with McDavid.
So you'd take it, eh?
Of course I would. McDavid could end up with a rod in his leg in the next 2 years. We don't know what the hell's going to happen there. Sidney Crosby, yeah. You know what you're getting.
I don't think.
And you have it. You have roughly 15 number one picks in your lineup. Okay, like at some point, maybe you'd like to win. And I agree. Like I think McDavid's going to be bananas. He's going to be great. Sid is great. You put Sid in that lineup, you're always like, oh, how do you got to find a way to get somebody in here who can lead and be a winner. What the hell's Crosby?
Did you talk much to McDavid at the draft? Did I ever ask you that?
I talked to him here and there. I mean, he's so goddamn boring. He's probably better away from a mic, I'm guessing. Like
100%.
Eichel is. Yeah, 100%. That's the thing. Eichel is eons better away from a mic, and I imagine McDavid is too.
Yep.
Okay.
All these guys, most of these guys are. They're not really like that.
So you would not trade the top pick for Sid.
Nope.
Which is to say that you wouldn't have traded the top pick for anybody.
Correct.
Wow.
Yeah, I feel that strongly about this.
Would you have traded the top pick for Subban and Galchenyuk?
Oh, Jean-Guy from Montreal. You're on the program.
He is, how you say, a turnover machine.
He does not play
the way that the Habs should play. I give them Subban and 5 picks.
That's what I imagine sports radio in the summer sounds like in Montreal. Just crazy Habs fans suggesting trades
for beleaguered
beleaguered hosts. Okay, contractually, I'm supposed to do this. So we'll go to the phones.
Trade the Subban to Avalanche for Beauchemin. And rights to Patrick Waugh.
He's got another season in him. I know it. I just know it.
All right. Well, back to Lexi's question. Okay.
All right. You do this one because I can do things like this.
You think about it for a second. Off the top of my head, not really. Just top of my head. Crosby, Ovechkin, Stamkos.
What? You know, she put Jonathan Taves in the list.
All right, McDavid's there too. All right, Crosby, Ovechkin.
Over Taves?
Stamkos.
You take Ovechkin over Taves? You
McDavid,
nuts.
Taves, Malkin, Tavares.
You're high.
Jonathan Taves is an amazing player, and he's a great leader, and he's got 3 cups, and he'll probably retire with 5. But he's on a really great team.
You left out the gold medals. By the way,
he's got them too, on really great teams. like if my team is if I have the first pick, my team is dog shit. And I love Jonathan Taves, but I want Crosby, Stamkos, Ovechkin, or McDavid to build around before Taves.
See, I'd almost be tempted to take him number one.
Taves.
Yeah.
Sorry, it was a glare from the rings. Obscuring your view of the draft board.
Have you seen him play?
Do you take yeah, so I'll hold take on? Taves. But you just said that you wouldn't trade Crosby for McDavid. So wouldn't McDavid be your number one?
Well, how are we doing? How are we doing this? This is like
I don't know. There's no logic to it. It's like some alternate universe where all these guys are available all of a sudden, and she's like picking a year.
You know what?
She's like picking a year. Okay, 2006. So McDavid is how old?
That's hilarious. He's a 97. So
yeah. There you go.
Lexi's bored at work. Essentially, essentially, Lexi, you're freaking bored at work right now, and you're dreaming up goofy questions to email into podcasts.
All right. Let's do two more, okay? This is from Patrick Murray. This is for you. Okay. What are your thoughts on the curious to hear Jeff Merrick's thoughts on the collections of the Hockey Hall of Fame. I recently made my first visit, and the room with the honored members and the hardware blew me away. I did think that the lower level could have been done a bit better of telling the story of the game. The artifacts are all cool. The exhibits seem to lack structure and continuity. Interested to know what a member of the Society of Hockey Geeks thinks, and would be interested to hear how the Hall of Fame has built its collection and grown over the years. What is your impression of the Hockey Hall of Fame outside of the Honored Members Hall and the awards?
You know what I like more than the Hockey Hall of Fame is the Resource Center. So putting on my member of the Society for International Hockey Research hat, that's what I like even more, and that's out in Etobicoke. The Hockey Hall of Fame itself can be a little bit too high-tech for some people, not high-tech enough, too nostalgic for some, not nostalgic enough. What I love about the Resource Center is, I like all like the really obscure things, like Third Line Center, Minnesota Fighting Saints, 1977. Or, you know, I want to see, actually, and they do have it. I love it. So I made the request the last time I was there because I wanted to see the Frank Mihaljevic trade piece of paper that was scribbled on by a very drunk Harold Ballard at the Royal York Hotel when he traded him for $1 million, which was overturned by the league because the people who made the deal were freaking hammered when they did it. They did the trade at the bar. And I'm like, I've always wanted to see that. And so the last time I was there, I'm like, hey, do you have that? And so right away, boom. Guy goes over and pulls it out. So that's the kind of thing that interests. That's the kind of thing that really interests me. Like that obscure, tiny, little, quirky, you know, bits of hockey paraphernalia and lore. The nice thing with the Hall of Fame is they keep rotating it. A lot of the displays, which is great. And a lot of it obviously comes from the Resource Center. But the thing about the Resource Center that's greatest too is all those freaking videos you can sit there and watch. And the last time I was there, honestly, wished there was almost like an entire room of video, because people donate it, right? Like when people pass on, they'll will their entire video collections to the Hall of Fame. There's tons of video that hasn't even been screened yet.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. Hasn't been screened or cataloged. So there's some treasures that are coming. So that's what I like about the capital H Hockey Hall of Fame. It's not necessarily the Hall of Fame itself at Young in Front, although I really do need to go because I haven't been for a couple of years. But the Hockey Hall of Fame Resource Center to me is the best one, the MasterCard Center. And I've told people, countless people, if you're going to go to the Hall of Fame and you really want to get geeky, go to the Hockey Hall of Fame Resource Center. It's infinitely better.
Right. Finally, this comes in from Eric Spagnuolo. And this is one I just wanted to clear up because this has been one that's sort of been out there for a bit, and it's time that we put this officially out there. With the adoption of the 3-on-3 overtime for the upcoming season, what happens if a penalty is called? Will they play 3-on-2?
No, I think they play 4-on-3, don't they?
They play 4-on-3, right, exactly.
Yeah.
That's just, let's put it out there in perpetuity. And, and there you have it.
Because it's classic, it's classic hockey. When there's a penalty, you add a player. You don't remove a player, for all the purists out there.
Oh, man. Okay. We got so far into the show without any of that nonsense coming from you.
Without any of that nonsense. I'm in a good mood. I'm going to go spend the rest of my day at a skate park with my 5-year-old. So I'm in a good mood. You got a new scooter today. I know. Got a one-piece finally. After 2 weeks of the other one, which he's almost completely mangled. Have I told you my whole life now? Pretty much outside of, you know, feeding my children here at home or going to the gym, now exists at the skate park here in Stouffville with my 5-year-old. And I swear, dude, I feel like a narc at a biker rally because there's always like kids doing crazy stunts and tricks on other scooters or skateboards. And I'm the parent sitting off on the bench while his 5-year-old's on his scooter. As everyone looks at me and says, hey, who brought grandpa? Nothing makes you quite feel as old as hanging out at a skate park, but try it out if you really want to feel your age sometime, Greg.
Karen Douglas has one more for you.
All right.
If you were the Edmonton Oilers, would you have traded the top overall pick to Montreal for Carey Price?
That would give me more pause than Sidney Crosby.
Yeah.
But still no.
Right. obviously Price and Galchenyuk.
What's with you and Galchenyuk today?
Well, I mean, it's just he's available, right? I mean, like, oh, he's not available, but he's available, if you know what I'm saying.
He's not going.
Right?
He's not going. He's not going.
He can't play center. You heard him. You heard what Bergevin said.
Oh, right. Yes, right. Okay.
Can't play center. Had nothing to do with any negotiations going on. Just can't play center.
Nothing. Just can't play center. Nothing. Nothing political whatsoever. Nothing about dollars and cents. Nope. 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 Nope.
All right. Listen. Thanks to Jim Nill. Sam, you're a beauty, and we love you, and we were just joshing with you, and if you could cut the Jim Nill interview and send it to me, that'd be the best.
We? No, it's you. Don't lop me in. You're the one snarking at him. I don't have to apologize
Sam,
for shit.
I'll survive. I promise, don't worry, guys. I've got thick skin.
I promise we won't be mean to you as much as Merrick encourages
Shit.
Thanks to everybody for listening. Thanks to everybody for chiming in on Going Postal. We gave you big fat, hour and 25 to chew on until we next speak to you next week.
And half of, and about 30 minutes of it was us bitching about how no one at either SportsCenter or Yahoo pays any attention to this podcast.
But again, we should all be very happy that we're able to do this show. I'm quite happy that my radio partner is the only Canadian in sports journalism that doesn't apparently have a cottage to go to.
Oh, you've been to my house, so it's kind of like a combination of like
it's sort of cottagey. Yeah,
that's what we wanted. Even like the inside-ish. Yeah, most cottages don't have a barn, but
cottagey. Yeah,
you know, I live in shorts and flops and t-shirts all summer, and it kind of feels like I'm going to the cottage. Mm-hmm. No, you're not buying it.
Yeah.
All right, fine. All right.
All right, but thank you so much for joining us. By the way, the loonie is now down to 77.3 U.S. cents.
Every American hockey fan should follow the Canadian loonie. Every hockey fan really should.
Because
this thing continues to plummet. Oh, God.
You know who should pay attention to it? Hockey fans in Quebec. Because, oh man.
Yeah.
Uh huh. All right. Love you all. Talk to you next week.
Kisses.
Bye. Thank you.